our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Michael Golden, Georgia Logothides, Joe Morris, and Chris Roebling. Our program tonight comes to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's Bruce Dumont or at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And, of course, we're on the World Wide Web at beyondthebeltway.com. That's the audio and video portion of the program each and every week. And tonight is somewhat of a special night. This is our 37th anniversary of this program. 37 years.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
All the way back to 1980, it began as a 13-week experiment on the public radio station WBEZ, and basically it was four people around talking about politics. We were talking about local politics at that time.
There was so much.
There was. It was a great time
there
to talk.
There was a moment.
It was a moment, but we also
Reagan
talked about
revolution.
We also talked a lot about national politics because right. There was a lot going on. Yeah. Reagan was
but locally
being
we were in the midst of Harold Washington.
Yes,
yeah, right.
That's right. No, it was no. Actually, before Harold Washington, 1980
was before.
That's was the Jane Byrne was still.
80 was Jane Byrne.
That's right. So and it was a great time. These other voices that you have just heard, I'm going to introduce them tonight, which normally I don't do. Michael Golden is here. Michael is the Democrat, and he is author of the book Unlock Congress, and one of our Republicans is Chris Roebling, and he is a WGN television political analyst.
I'm a believer in locking up Congress.
Yes, that's right. And that used to be very, very fashionable.
I only got that because I read Michael's book, okay? I read the book, but I came to the opposite.
I'll take it. You know what? Read it. That's fine.
Yeah. But anyway, it's a unique show also in that rarely in 37 years – have we ever started a show with not all of our guests here? Tonight we have 50% of the team is here. We understand that the other 50% are stuck in Chicago traffic, so we're going to begin the discussion. By the way, let me mention the phone lines are open again, 1-800-723-8289. We do have a lot to talk about, as we generally do. I want to talk a little bit about the issue of health care. And the Republican Senate, they now have a plan to repeal and replace Obamacare. And I want to focus the first question to you, Chris Roebling, and to Michael. Politically, what's the best thing that can happen with the vote next week? Politically, what happens next week? Not policy, not how people are reacting to it, but from a political standpoint, what's the big issue coming out of the Senate next week?
Well, I honestly think for the Republicans at this point, you know, it is June, almost July, and it's time to get this done. And so I would say the big thing would be a 52-vote Republican majority so that they don't have to rely on Vice President Mike Pence, and they can get it done and go back to the people who have been electing Republican senators, Republican members of the House, and, of course, President Trump, and say, we ran on repeal and replace. We're checking that box. We're going to conference, and we're going to have a bill. We're going to have a new law.
Michael Golden, you've written the book Unlock Congress. You've been an advisor and run campaigns for Democrats to Congress. From a political standpoint, what should they do? Do you want to happen next week?
Well, first of all, on behalf of Chris, I'm going to wish you happy 37th anniversary. And because it's your anniversary, I'm not going to do the Democrat thing. I'm going to let that go. So you mentioned the Unlock Congress, which is a nonpartisan book. The only reason I bring that up is because I think the best thing that could happen politically is what's not happening, which is that there would be some kind of, in the days of Jake Javits and when these people talked across the aisle and there wasn't this whole political realignment in the country, they would actually figure out what is the best policy. It's not going to be 100% one way and 0% the other way. That's not happening, and I just have to, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that. It's unfortunate that they're trying to jam this through. And I think there are a lot of Republicans – certainly the moderate guys in the House, men and women in the House and the Senate, who don't like this bill. They don't like this, but they have a commitment over 7 years to do something. And I have to say, Chris, I'm not so
But does that, yeah, but does this give the Democrats an issue? They don't really have much of an issue.
But I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure that they want this bill to go through. I'm not even so sure McConnell. He's the long game guy. I'm not so sure he wants to pass it. I have a feeling that he would be okay if it didn't pass and they moved on to tax reform. Yes, they wouldn't get the savings they want, and yes, they wouldn't get, you know, a win. Would it, you know, as Trump, they define a win as anything passed, and I don't think that's really a policy win when it comes to Congress. So I'm not so sure that that all of those senators, certainly seven of them right now, don't want it to pass.
Now again, there are five to seven senators depending on which list you're looking at, but it looks like McConnell is still quite a few votes away from getting what he needs.
You know, I think that the bill in this on the Senate side is more comprehensive, more thought out, more sort of complete whole than what we saw come out of the House process. And I think that it is addressing the criticisms that have been leveled by the Democrats at the House bill. So where Obamacare has fallen short on its promises, I think this bill gives all Republican incumbents a lot to talk about. And I think that's what's vitally important, is that we do something to rescue, obviously, not Obamacare per se, but the presumed beneficiaries of Obamacare.
The healthcare non-system.
The folks, the individuals who got left behind because of the slapdash. And Obamacare took 12 months, and it has not proven to be a more sound policy for that gestation.
But aren't people going to be left behind?
No. I think
nobody's
left
behind.
I think what happens here, I think that what this bill does is include this entire sort of transition realm from Medicaid to the private market by funding the tax credits at 350% of the poverty level.
So what about all these people that are saying they're going to lose their Medicaid?
Well, I mean,
again, I guess my question
including
is,
Governors Kasich and those, Governor Sandoval, Republican governors in Nevada.
Here's my political question to you. If there is a number, now you may not want to agree with the number is, but if there's a number of people from Medicaid who are going to lose their health insurance, is it the Republican gamble that those people aren't going to vote for Republicans anyway, and frankly, they're on the wrong side of history and politics?
No, I think the Republican proposal is that we are creating a sounder and more sustainable system overall, number one. Number two, with the tax plan coming up and with the infrastructure plan coming up and with the enormous success Trump has already had in repealing, you know, burdensome regulations, I think as the economy grows, we grow out of a large dependence on publicly assisted health care. And we get back to folks having jobs, employers having advantages, employers having benefits, and giving health care to their employees.
The problem is that
we've got to pause. 1-800-723-8029. From coast to coast and border to border, I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
Historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much. Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school. Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
week. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for being with us this evening. 1-800-723-8029. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, our 37th anniversary show.
Yay. And we Congratulations, Bruce.
Without two guests. Well, thank goodness they are now here, and we're going to hear from them and sort of follow up on what we've been talking about. George Ologothides, you have been a guest on this show for many times in the last primarily 5 to 7 years. You've been on here a lot, and you're with Daily Cause, and you're one of a prodigious blogger of political thought. What is, from a political standpoint, what's the politics of what happens next week if the Senate passes their bill or if they don't have the votes to do it? What happens politically?
Putting the actual policy aside.
Yes, policy aside. Whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. Politically, what happens?
Well, politically.
And what do you want to happen?
Well, I'll tell you, obviously, we don't want the bill to pass, right? We want the bill to die, because if it passes, obviously, it will result in people dying. But politically speaking, if it does pass, you can expect the White House to treat it as another big win, right? But we're going to have the same thing that happened with the House bill passing. When the House bill passed, Donald Trump held this big ceremony in the Rose Garden, mm-hmm. Garden congratulating himself. And then he was on the talk shows this weekend on Fox News admitting that he had called the bill mean, right? Yeah. So I have a feeling we're going to see the same thing here, where if the bill does pass and eventually goes back to the House, you know, and ends up in some type of final form, we'll get the cheerleading, everybody will pat themselves on the back, and then reality will set in about the policy of the bill.
Joe Morris, our Republican tonight. Joe, what is your hope for what happens next week?
Well, I hope the bill passes, because Obamacare is a disaster and really, really, really hurts people. It needs to be eviscerated and started over again, and I think that will happen. So I hope that's the case. If the bill passes, Donald Trump will celebrate and thump his chest. If the bill does not pass, Donald Trump will find some way to celebrate and thump his chest. But if the bill fails to pass, the American people will show, I think, a fierce disappointment in Republicans unable to deliver on the promise to repeal and replace Obamacare. People want that changed. And the retribution the Democrats were not able to visit on Republican congressional candidates in South Carolina and in Georgia recently will be visited against Republicans if they can't pass a repeal and replacement
of
Obamacare.
And how do you – I'm going to ask my Republican. I'll start with you, Joe. Yeah. How do the Republicans bring together with less than a week, allegedly, how do they bring the 5 to 7 Republicans that aren't on board yet? Is it the moderates that have the cave? Is it the conservatives? I mean, is one of those sides going to suffer more than the other?
If there are adjustments that can be made to achieve a compromise within the Republican caucus, I'm sure they will happen. Mitch McConnell is an astonishingly good inside player. He's a terrible outside player, but an astonishingly good inside player. And so if that is possible, it will happen. If not, there will be immense pressure on the moderates to join the majority of the caucus and make legislation happen. And,
Michael,
there ought to be such pressure.
From a political standpoint, what do you think happens again?
I'm not going to answer your question on the politics of it, because I've heard that 100 times since the morning shows. The shame of this is that they're playing a game of whack-a-mole. They're trying to fix this, and just to slam it through the Senate, and then it'll have to go back to the House, like Georgia was saying. And the shame is they don't bring doctors, and none of the medical associations are for this. The healthcare system, we have worse outcomes than other advanced democracies because we don't have a system. It's a non-system. The parts of our healthcare system are not connected, and it's not efficient, and this is not going to make it better.
Michael is retreating into the area of policy.
God forbid.
You see, because he knows that the politics are going to go against the Democratic position.
The Republicans.
Well, I think the politics are going to go in favor of the Republicans, and I'll tell you why. There's a basic rule, which is promises made, promises kept. And I think
not if it hurts people, though.
Well, I don't think this is going to hurt people, and I think what the Obamacare supporters have to answer for are the missed metrics, are the fact that, you know, fewer people have signed up. They're facing vastly – in the state of Pennsylvania, you talk about the states that decided the election. So take a look at Pennsylvania. What's the lived reality of the regular family in Pennsylvania? Since Obamacare – Their premiums have gone up as much as 120%.
You think premiums are going to go down?
Hold on just one second. In addition to that, not only have the premiums gone up, but the deductibles have gone up. And so care is that much farther away for these average families.
You point out a good problem with Obamacare because listen, there were a lot of moving parts in play. Nobody said that Obamacare was perfect. But you dislike Obamacare because it resulted in certain areas, higher premiums, higher deductibles. The CBO, when it scored the House bill, said that that's exactly what's going to happen on a higher level under the Republican bill.
And tomorrow and people, they'll do that the same for
exactly,
the Senate bill.
And you can't attack the CBO because it's a Republican appointee, right?
No, I can attack the CBO, and I think it should be abolished.
Is, you know, going back to the politics of it, you have a bill that currently Obamacare is polling higher than the Republican health care bill. The health care bill is polling, I think, in the low teens or something like that in terms of approval. And the Republicans are going to have a major problem because of the massive Medicaid cuts. Which states use
except that they delayed them? Except that they delayed the cuts. That's they've done a really cynical thing. They put it beyond 2018, so it may. You know what, Chris? You may be right because they've done that. It may not hit those swing voters till after the midterms.
I think they may have learned that from
the
Obama.
The red states are the ones that use Medicaid the most, right? So when we're talking about Trump voters, right? The Trump voters are the ones that will be most affected by this bill, detrimentally affected. But as you point out,
swing
you know,
voters.
it was a cynical move to phase in those cuts. After the 20,
Joe, can you
election.
Respond just to the point that Georgia has just made? Is that it is Trump voters that may be the first to feel the pain of this bill?
No, well, I think that's right. I think Trump voters will be the first to feel the pain if the bill passes in its in the current confused form, or if Obamacare remains in place. They are people who are really hurting, but there will be more pain if Obamacare stays in place. If this bill doesn't pass, there will be more pain because there's a fundamental bait and switch here. Which was the Medicare expansion was sold on the premise that the federal government was going to pay 100%, but that was only for a certain amount of time. And after a certain amount of time, that 100% drops to 90%, and in out years, it has to drop less, and the states are already scrambling to try to figure out how to pay that gap. As that happens, the states are going to get squeezed, and care for people is going to get squeezed. And additionally, more and more doctors are making it very clear they're not going to accept Medicare patients.
Medicaid.
That's what I mean about the non-system.
Medicaid.
I agree with that.
So we began with an enormous bait and switch on the part of Mr. Obama. If you like your doctor, you can keep him. That was absolutely false.
Yeah.
And more.
And
doctors,
he knew it was false at the time.
And
he
more
said
and more doctors
it.
Are backing out of the system.
But didn't Trump also say that he was not going to mess with anybody's
said
Medicare?
Universal coverage. A heart. I'm going to cover everybody.
Let's clear our Republican. Didn't he say that as well many times?
Yes, and he is gambling with something, I think, that is dangerous for him in terms of the irritation of Trump voters, the pushing Trump voters away. He's flirting with the proposition. He's been talking about it off and on since January of letting Obamacare collapse.
Right.
Letting nature take its course and letting Obamacare collapse. But the problem is, I think most Trump voters now see this happening on his watch.
I want to just say, I give the Republican Party a D-minus in terms of being prepared for this moment and in terms of building a public constituency for this step. And I don't have much time, only seven or eight years. Had 7 or 8 years. And, you know, I mean, the fact, the morning after the election for Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell not to wake up and say, now it is time for us to build a constituency and to have a series of televised hearings where people recite their horror stories from
Why don't
Obamacare.
You think they did
I agree
that?
With you, Chris.
Why don't you?
Because Republicans are genetically inferior. And I'm the person to say this because I was raised a Democrat and switched. So I have the benefit of the Democratic background genealogically, but I am surrounded by Republicans whose idea of telling a story goes like this.
No, wait. We've seen Republicans trot out, you know, the healthcare horror stories, and Donald Trump did, and he had the Obamacare horror story victims, quote unquote, on his plane, and Kellyanne Conway was trying to say that. But for every one person that you have who may have had a negative experience with Obamacare, right? Oh, my premium increased 20 or 30 or 40%, right? You have like the ones who were arrested on Capitol Hill, disabled people who were arrested and dragged out of their wheelchairs. who were they're saying that Obamacare either saved their lives or is providing for their life-saving care.
You're talking about Medicaid,
so you have,
which was
you
there
have
before.
Stories, you have stories on either side of the equation. You have regular families, not Medicaid families. You have regular families who receive these subsidies, who without those subsidies, because of the insurance market, which both sides agree is horrifically broken and needs some type of reform. Obamacare was a stab at that, absolutely. And there are, you know, other ways to do it. The Republicans haven't come up with a viable solution.
There are some features in the Senate plan that actually move in the right direction, like ending the tie between employment and medical coverage, and creating by simply creating tax deductibility for people other than those who require their medical coverage through employment. That's a tremendous move in the right direction, providing multi-state markets for health insurance without changing the regulatory regime that's fundamentally dependent upon the states. I mean, there are clever, innovative ways of doing that, and some aspects of this legislation move in that direction, which is absolutely brilliant.
Michael.
I mean, I was just going to say, Bruce Bartlett, when you started this show, he was working for Ronald Reagan. He's been a conservative for 30 years. And he basically, this week, after taking quite a break after the election, wrote that this is 30 years of the right getting further and further right. They ended up with Donald Trump, and they can't figure out. This health care bill is a mess. It's not because the Republicans are pushing it. What they're trying to do is not going to be sustainable for the long term. People will get hurt because it's a matter of cost. Chris, it's fair to say as a conservative that the Medicare is going bankrupt and something needs to be done. But I don't think it's actually intellectually honest to say no one's going to get hurt from this bill.
But we've got $2 trillion.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, Jason, I've got to tell you, you're pretty much everything this company is looking for in an entry-level candidate.
Great.
Your resume isn't quite what we're used to, but you've got a fantastic work ethic.
Thank you.
And I'm impressed by how you carry yourself.
So, should we talk about the job?
What? The job? Oh, sorry. Yeah, I have no way of recruiting or even meeting you. This interview didn't happen.
It may sound ridiculous, and that's because it kind of is. There's a huge pool of talent your company is missing out on. Meet the grads of life. Who are they? Talent worth knowing about. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Man, we really could have used him.
Don't miss out on a resource many innovative companies have already discovered. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Back in Chicago, and we've got callers on the line. Let's go to Kevin, listening to us in Austin, Texas, on KLBJ, one of our oldest affiliates. Nice to hear from Texas tonight. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think as far as the health care bill, you have to look at the Senate map of 2018. What states are going to be up? I mean, does it matter if they didn't pass something? Hey, we tried the best we could, but you know what? We need some more Republicans in the Senate. I mean, there's your argument for kind of slow walking this thing. So I'll just listen to your comments.
Michael, what do you think?
That's what I was saying to Chris earlier. I think that makes some sense. I'm not sure if this thing gets through that it's not going to be hurtful, painful for the Republicans in the midterms. That's at least an excuse. If you could elect Donald Trump, you could rationalize anything. So why not that we couldn't have – we didn't have 60 votes
but Hiller,
in the Senate.
But Hiller of Nevada, who is up, he's not on board with this. I mean, he's worrying about his – re-election. So there's a Republican. He's the only one. He's the only Republican up in a blue state.
Right.
Yes.
And part of the issue there, so he came out in a press conference very forcefully against the bill.
Yeah, very much so.
And so when he does vote for it, you're going to have his opponent splicing up, you know, on the one hand, you know.
Well, he won't.
That's what I'm saying. If he does,
he won't be one of the votes.
He's saying in this current form, you know, they always put the caveat there. But
I think, you know. Rand Paul, Ted Cruz.
They'll probably come around.
I think those four are going
Johnson
to come around.
Will come
I
around,
think you're
going
to end up, so probably. Back to what I said, well, you guys, before you got here, I was talking about 52. It's really probably 51. 51 is a huge success.
Well, how about Colin? How's Collins going to vote for this? Or Murkowski with the Planned Parenthood stuff?
Who wants to be, well, you get down to 50 and there. You've got Pence. So there's a little bit of
that's 50, not 52.
Joe already said there's going to be enormous pressure on these guys to go with the president's program, whatever it is. And there is going to be pressure every one of these. And I don't think this is necessarily the best way to legislate. But we had kind of a scratchbook version from the House. I think we have a more refined version from the Senate. And the real issue is what comes out of conference. And I think every step of the way, they're getting to a better product.
So you think, I mean, given the politics of let's say, Texas, I mean, Cruz is running now. I mean, of those senators that are wavering at the moment, who are the ones most likely, in your view, that are going to be there for a yes vote?
Cruz, I think, is an excellent
Cruz.
Example.
Paul just got reelected. Johnson just got reelected. Mike Lee is
those, be there. Some of those guys are criticizing the proposed reforms because they aren't market reformative enough.
They're bargaining. They're
trying to get other things, but they will come around precisely because they want to make the case that saying, look, the American people for most of the last decade have invested in a very painful and not well thought through process of health care reform. It's been screwed up by President Obama and by the Pelosi Democrats, and now it looks like it's being screwed up by Republican tinkerers who can't embrace a systematic approach to the problem. We need more market-oriented Republicans in the House and the Senate. That's the pitch that they will take.
Let's go to Carlos in Austin, Texas. He's listening to us on Sirius XM Satellite Radio tonight. Go ahead, Carlos.
Hey, buddy. I voted for Trump and some of these Republicans to repeal Obamacare, not replace it with anything. And that's why I want this bill to fail, because I see this as a rhino trap. If this bill passes and the premiums keep going up, and the health care system that used to be the greatest in the world fails, they're going to blame Obama. And these rhinos are going to get away with murder, and they're trying to stop his agenda by forcing this health care issue. I say, don't pass health care. Work on the tax plan and let Obamacare die, or just pass full repeal.
Yeah,
That's all they need to do.
All right. Thank Chris. You, Carlos. This is why I think you're wrong.
I'm not wrong.
Okay. I understand you believe that to the core
that
of your
base voter.
Yeah, but here's why I think you're wrong. This bill actually removes the mandate, and it also removes the requirement about coverage. And so now you've got you are taking, as Joe points out, an incremental step towards a market. You're increasing choice. You're allowing people to decide for themselves. We have six million people in the country who have paid more than $3 billion in taxes for the privilege of not taking the health plan that was jammed down their throat by the Pelosi Democrats. That is now over.
Carlos,
big step in the right direction.
Back to Carlos. Go ahead.
Full repeal will bring back the free market. What is the hard problem with that?
The hard problem is called 52 Republican senators.
No, free market maximum. Free market principles alone are not going to provide health care for people.
Carlos, last word to you, then we're going to go on. Carlos, last word to Carlos, then we're going to come back to this. Go ahead.
It's just these rhinos are setting it up to make a Trump's agenda unpassable.
Carlos is
just
wrong.
We're going to move on.
If we repeal Obamacare, we don't get back to a free market. We get back to the non-free market blend
Real quick, Georgia. And the fact that the market can't take care of itself. Yes, the Republican bills get rid of the mandate, right? But they understand that without the mandate, you're not going to have enough healthy people signing up to the market to lower premiums, which is why under the Republican bill, instead of paying the federal government a tax or a penalty for not having health care coverage, you have to pay the insurance companies instead.
Hold on a second.
Go ahead.
Below all of the politics are two profoundly different views.
Yes.
Very significantly different views about how to allocate resources in a free society and how to deliver an essential service. Okay? That's what's below. And
a life and death in a lot of cases. Well,
right. I mean, it's not like people were dying on the streets in 1966 because we had screwed up the healthcare system. What we are talking about here is, I believe, a Democratic urge to repay constituencies such as the public employee unions through
if Democrats wanted to repay their constituency and look only out for their constituency, they wouldn't be pushing for increasing Medicaid funding, which supports primarily Trump supporters.
No, Medicaid funding does not support primarily Trump supporters.
A hell of a lot of
Medicare
them.
Funding.
A hell of a lot of
no,
them.
No, 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 no. A hell Medicaid, of a lot of Medicaid. Medicaid funding. Not,
Medicaid is
a
not
lot
supporting
of,
Trump. Time,
a lot of the people in red states. It is an undisputable fact that the red states utilize some of the most Medicaid funding.
In urban areas. In rural
Back
areas.
To calls. Rural areas, Roger in Austin, Texas, KLBJ. Go ahead.
Good evening. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Bruce, one of the great things about your show is you cut through oftentimes to the true issues. And this whole healthcare debate really needs to be cut through to the truth. And that is, we have a $20 trillion deficit. We have our debt. We have a large ongoing deficit. And unless we make some changes in our healthcare, because the government has now interposed themselves into an even greater percentage of delivering healthcare, it's unsustainable. We can argue about all of this other stuff, but Medicaid is a $500 billion a year program now. And, you know, the guy from Nevada, he's failing on it because the ACA, Affordable Care Act, almost doubled the number of people on Medicaid in Nevada. You look at a state like Texas, it raised the enrollment by about 7% because Texas did not join into the expansion program. And you know what? We don't have people dying in the streets, and somebody just made a great point. Back in the 60s, people weren't dying in the streets, and we got along. Americans and people in general, human beings, are very adaptable, and they will move with the policy. You know, Affordable Care Act, it was a shell game. Most of the people that were on that subsidized were on bronze plans with $6,000 deductibles that they had no way of paying any of that deductibility. They could get a free health care checkup every year, but if you got sick, Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, whatever you want to call it, wasn't a great lifeline unless you had some money in the bank.
Roger, Joe Morris has got a comment for you. Joe?
Well, I appreciate the encouragement to try to cut through the issues to get to the real essentials of things. And I think a minute ago we were kind of close to it. There are two radically competing visions here about how to deliver to people something that everybody needs. Healthcare is something, it's a basic necessity, like housing, like food, like water. And the vision of the left and of the Democrats is it ought to be seen as a right, that is an entitlement, something that government is committed to deliver, the single-payer type system, where you need healthcare, you present yourself to the government, you get what you need, and you get and it gets paid for. That is seen as a moral imperative. On the other hand, conservatives, Republicans, see it in a radically different way, see it as a service or a commodity that is best provided to the greatest number of people most successfully through the marketplace without the intervention of government, without government mandates, without compulsion, without people paying for it by taxes, but instead being paid for through market incentives.
Michael Golden.
One last thought. What we have at the moment is a complete muddle of the two.
Right.
We have government commanding certain mixes of benefits that don't make sense to people in the real world, and at the same time not keeping the eye on the ball of actually delivering the services.
Michael Golden.
It's the worst of all possible options.
I want to ask you a genuinely intellectually honest question, because what he said about long-term unfunded liability, actually he just talked about the debt, but when you add long-term unfunded liabilities in, it's tens and tens of trillions. It's far beyond $20 trillion. Here's my question for you, because I agree that we do have radically different solutions to this. But here's my question.
One second. We have to break.
We're
being fair here. I'm not going to let you ask the question, because then he's got 3 minutes to answer it. You can ask the question when we come back. 1-800-723-8029. Bruce Dumont, our 37th anniversary show tonight. Nice to have you with us.
Supposed to hold through the
juice, Mom. Juice, juice, juice.
Mommy, why are we going to the store? Mom.
Mom, I want
Mommy.
Juice.
Mom.
Juice, juice, juice.
Mom.
Your child will have different needs at different stages of life, and that includes the car seat. See, car crashes are a leading killer of children ages 1 to 13. Protect your child's future at every stage of life. Go to safercar.gov/the right seat.
A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to Mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
We're Sumont back in Chicago, and before the break, Michael Golden, you were going to set up a question for Joe Morris, and we didn't want to give him any advance notification, so
that's right.
Half of America has been waiting for this answer.
All right, so we have different philosophies about this, but I like to ask my conservative friends, you want to apply free market principles and competition to the marketplace when it comes to healthcare as a service or commodity. And I understand that from the standpoint of trying to drive down costs. But here's the thing. When you do that, even if it's successful, even if it's successful in driving down some of those costs, you don't think that there are still going to be millions of Americans who, without some government subsidy based on their age or economic strata, are going to not be able to afford health care?
And if that's the case, then we need to design a system that provides access to care for those people who can't afford it.
Okay, but that's not free market. That's different then.
No, but it's against the background of a fundamentally free market system, as we have a free market system in housing or a free market system in food.
So you want a mix, if you will.
I don't want a mix. I want a free market system that's providing health care, and I want people who need subsidization in order to go in the marketplace to buy their health care to get their subsidies.
That's a mix. The subsidies are coming from the government.
It's a far cry from the government being the provider or the government being the regulator.
Exactly. That's an answer.
Chris Roebling now wants to elaborate on his position.
I believe the history of healthcare delivery in the United States since World War II has been one of increasing government involvement because of the very topic that I think you two brought up. The tax skewing, the rent seeking of these constituencies, be they the American
Great Society, basically the programs that were set up.
Before the Great Society, I mean, employers went in to get their tax benefit on the healthcare costs. And
there were wage and price controls coming out of World War II that prevented them from competing in the marketplace for labor by offering higher wages. But they could offer fringe benefits like health care. So they went to Congress and said, let us deduct the cost of health care and offer that to our employees. So health care became trapped. If you wanted health care, you became trapped in getting it from an employer. And if you bought health care on your own, you couldn't deduct it from your taxes.
So this was a foundation of intervention, which then led to random interventions along the way. And I believe the best thing for the folks who need health care is to create transparency in the marketplace, to create bills of service so that you know what are we going to pay for this? What are we going to pay for that? That has to be out there. Hospitals, doctors, healthcare device companies all have to compete with each other. And if you do that, you bring down prices, you spread out costs, and that way the folks who need government assistance can receive subsidies.
Georgia, and then we're going to go to calls.
Those types of reforms that are really meant to rein in an insurance market that has been abusive towards its consumers. We can all agree about that.
One at a time.
We can all agree about that, right? Those types of reforms from the government won't, you know, the ones they just talk about, having these invoices, having the transparency, everything like that. Those types of reforms can't happen when you have the insurance companies essentially writing the legislation that polices them, which is what we saw over the last few weeks.
Right.
Exactly. So we're all for reining in all of
We're all for stopping the rent seeking by everybody.
I'm not here for the insurance companies. I'm not here for the hospitals or for the doctors. I think we have to look at this from the standpoint of the average American family and how much money do they have. And this is why
I am here to also engage the audience, and let's go to Steve in Grantham, New Hampshire, and he's on WNTK, which is our second oldest affiliate, the Bob Vinicor's great
Bruce.
Station in the Granite State. Go ahead, Steve.
Thanks, Bruce. I've got a number of points, so I'll try to say them quickly. Your question about politics, in my opinion, it will hurt the GOP as more and more people do lose coverage or really get inferior coverage.
Steve, let me ask you the quick follow-up I asked Chris several segments ago. Those that are going to fall into that category, are those people that would have voted for a Republican anyway, or are those locked into the Democrats?
I think that when people who are, many of them will be Trump voters who will be losing various forms of coverage, and they may, just like Democrats got disenchanted with Obamacare, you know, when you own it, what Colin Powell said, when you break it, you own it.
So it's already broken. I just want to say, Steve, I couldn't disagree with you more. I think that what you're talking about is a profoundly conflicted and, in my opinion, seized up system. I mean, we are talking about $2 trillion of new spending that adds to the deficit that Professor Golden mentioned. $1 trillion of new taxes. We're talking about a reduction. You have now 40% of American residents who are participating in the program have precisely one choice. And in certain states, we know Iowa,
Go ahead.
The Republican thing isn't necessarily fixing it. But let me go a few things. The free market is a myth. And someone said that earlier, and it might have been the Republican who was disputing it. You can't have, and I'm talking against my own economic interests. Part of my business is we have a significant health group, health insurance business that we handle for businesses. Without having mandatory coverage of some type, the insurance companies are going to be on the hook for adverse selection. They can't cover people with pre-existing conditions unless you cover everybody. And that was the idea, and originally was a Republican idea on mandatory. Now, if you're going to say people don't have mandatory coverage, I would like to know, how do you pay for the free riders, the ones who don't take coverage, who do get sick? Do they get free coverage in the ER room, which isn't really great medical care, you know, in terms of long-term care? It's okay for trauma. But, you know, who's going to pay for those people? Well, it's going to be the people who have insurance are going to pay for the people who aren't paying for insurance. I'll give you a real quick,
would you acknowledge that?
I would, and I would add that free riders at some point have to pay the cost of the decisions that they make.
But they don't.
They
we do.
No, they
that's
do.
The point.
They go bankrupt. They do make those decisions. They do choose to.
And they go bankrupt.
They do choose to be free
riders. And
that's
why a lot of people in bankruptcy are because of medical care costs.
Well,
so
that's called getting the benefit of your bargain. I mean, what you're talking about, I understand.
I'd love to give
Steve,
you what I
Steve, I understand your
solution.
Ideological point that the free market is a myth. I think that is also, I believe, truly, that there is no perfect free market. I mean, don't let us get, because there's always a government framework within which these markets operate. But you have got to understand, I think everybody who is honest about this has got to understand that when government starts purchasing and allocating the good, then you are into a situation in which there is no price discipline whatsoever, and there are any number of people incentivized to take more than what they are entitled to.
Actually,
Steve,
we've
got to move on. Thank you for your call. I think you got your dime's worth tonight. I'm Bruce Dumont from Coast to Coast and Border to Border on the 37th anniversary of Beyond the Beltway. The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Hey everybody, this is Josh Groban. After so many years on the stage, one of my favorite things about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. Every year, billions of pounds of excess food go to waste, while 1 in 5 children may be left not knowing where their next meal is coming from, or if it's even coming at all. Thankfully, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food and helps deliver it to kids in need across the country. But they can't do it alone. join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Thank you very much for being with us tonight. 1-800-723-8029. We're going to switch gears for a while, and I want to talk about another issue. We talked about it briefly last week, but again, this past week, as they frequently do, the Washington Post came out with a bombshell story, and it was about Russia and about the election, which is not necessarily new. The new piece, however, involves the role of the Obama administration in responding to evidence that they had received that the Russians were meddling in our elections, and that it came right from the top. And President Obama knew about it in August of last year. And I'm going to ask everybody. One person was quoted in the article, obviously an unnamed source, but they said that, you know, they kind of screwed it up. I mean, they choked. Georgia, we've spent a lot of time on this program over the last year talking with about that campaign. What does this story tell you about Barack Obama, that he was asleep at the switch when there was an assault on our democracy?
I don't know if asleep at the switch is the right term. I think we have to appreciate the context. So the rest of the article describes kind of what he did when he found out, right? And one of the very first things that he did was approach Mitch McConnell. And Mitch McConnell's response when he found out that the intelligence agencies are starting to get information about Russian interference in the election was, if you go public with this, I'm going to view it as a partisan thing, right? So imagine being the president of the United States, knowing that a foreign government is trying to interfere in your election, and instead of having the support of the other party, it's a threat that if you go public with it, everything's going to be viewed through the partisan prism. And so I think that's probably why you saw a reluctancy to go public earlier. Now, we all knew before the election that Russia was meddling in the election. If people remember that infamous debate moment where Hillary Clinton called Donald Trump Putin's puppet, right? We knew that there was something going on with Russia, and people voted for Donald Trump anyway, knowing that there might be a Russia connection there.
All right, now, I want to hear from the Republican side. Now, gentlemen, well, I'll let you make the opening response here. What was your response when you read the story of what the president knew and when he knew it about Russian meddling in our election?
What took us so long to get there? Because it seems to me that it's been obvious that if anybody was looking at the Russians through rose-colored lenses, it was Barack Obama. It was Barack Obama who put down Mitt Romney in 2012 at one of their presidential debates when Mitt Romney was saying the greatest threat to the United States is Vladimir Putin and Russia. And Mr. Obama said to him, the 1980s are calling, they want their foreign policy back. It was Barack Obama who had sent off Mrs. Clinton with the reset button earlier in his administration.
No, but let me just stop you short, because I'm going to interrupt. I want you to follow up on what George has said, and that is, if the president had come out and said something in a more demonstrative way, he would have been accused of partisanship.
Of course he would have. In fact, it would have led to questions to him, Bruce, about why he was not more vigorous earlier in the cycle in addressing the problem of a clear Russian interference in our domestic politics. Remember, long before that, there had been the anti-Trump stuff, GPS, I'm forgetting the name, GPS 360.
The Karl Rove group.
The anti-Trump group that was funded by Democrats that had engaged a retired British
agent
who was using this Russian supplied information to
create a dossier.
The so-called dossier on Donald Trump. Right, exactly. The embarrassing dossier on Donald Trump, which turned out to be completely phony stuff. But
you don't know that. That's yet. Not true.
Well,
some of it's been
commercial. Let's just say that our
I want to go back and forth because I think this is a very important discussion. Right. I want to go back to the Democrats here, specifically on the role of Barack Obama in dealing with this assault on the democracy.
Well, first of all, Joe said that he should have been rougher on this earlier when it was clear. If I'm not mistaken in the Washington Post article, if that's true, when it became really clear from the intelligence community agencies was in August of 2016. Now, you could make the argument that Barack Obama, the president, should have come out and done that, even when the Republicans, when they did the briefing in the Gang of Eight, didn't go there. But I have to say, I'll make a point about Mitch McConnell. He wrote that book, The Long Game. I will give him this. He is great at it. From the Supreme Court, the number he ran for a year and a half getting that Supreme Court Justice Gorsuch in to not – he knew the intelligence community was right and that Putin was screwing with the election, and he was thinking about the long game, and he knew that he would put the president in a box and he would look partisan. And now if he gets – I don't think he's going to, but it's possible still. I'd say 30-40%. If he gets this health care bill passed, those will be three big wins in a row because he is a great – forget party. He's a great tactician.
I want to go back to the issue, the focus of the question.
Yeah, about Obama.
Obama's role when he found out the information from his intelligence people.
I read the piece today. It gave me a migraine headache. It may have contributed to Michael's migraine headache.
Yes.
Because you have these extremely intelligent people wandering around talking to each other in the White House with this explosive information, and they can't seem to figure out what to do. And it reminded me not just of Benghazi, where President Obama, to his everlasting credit, although, you know, whatever you think of him, he said, do whatever it takes to save our guys. And then he apparently disappeared for the next 16 hours. At least he gave an order, which was not followed. But he did give an order. And I give him credit to the extent he was involved. But, you know, you go back to the attack by North Korea on one of our corporate citizens, which was, I think, Columbia Pictures Industries, Sony Industries. And I said at the time, I think I said on this program, this is an attack by a foreign government on an American company.
The banking system next.
It is like a destroyer pulls up next to Seattle and starts attacking Boeing or something like that.
Yeah.
And I said, where the heck is the response? And there was no learning inside the Obama administration through these crises.
You don't know about covert responses.
I'm sorry.
That is not.
Inside the Obama administration that got us to a clear response. And I deeply regret it.
Well, before August, there were all kinds of indications that things were very wrong in terms of security, protecting ourselves against the Russians and, for that matter, the Chinese. We knew well before August, for example, that the Chinese had completely penetrated the Office of Personnel Management.
Exactly.
And millions of records of currently serving civil servants as well as the entire retiree force, including all members of Congress and the executive branch and the judiciary.
We're talking about Russia, though.
Here's the point.
We know.
Gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, let me. I'm gonna fine tune this discussion, and I'm gonna try to focus on it because we did allude to it during the campaign. And that is, and I've said this numerous times in the wake of the Sony attack and also the loss of all the federal records, the commander-in-chief and I'll use the term again, was asleep at the switch. We did not have a bona fide cybersecurity plan in place.
Exactly.
And we still don't, in my view, we still don't today. I mean, the point is that in the world of world politics, the Russians are more effective at hacking and everything else related to cybersecurity than the United States of America.
That we don't, hold on to that.
Based on what we've read in the papers. Based on what we read in the papers. I'm going to give you a response.
Okay.
Used to be with the CIA. We'll hear your perspective when we get back. I'm Bruce Tumor.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much. Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school. Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
I'm back in Chicago. Chris Roebling, once upon a time you worked in the Central Intelligence Agency, as we've talked about when you've been on this program many times. You were going to make a point
I was going to make the point that anybody who cares about Russo-American relations, which is an amazing story, amazing history, would know that throughout the entire Soviet period, and I mean the entire Soviet period, from a few years after the revolution, the Soviet Union was supremely focused on influencing American elections.
The so-called main enemy.
And don't take my word for it. Yale Press has an enormous library of information on this, one of the leading books of which is The Soviet World of American Communism, in which minute details of involvement in campaigns by labor unions, which are being backed by Moscow, is all recorded. I mean, this is not new information. I do point out that, you know, in this, now Obama comes from that wing of the Democratic Party, which has always had rose-colored glasses about both the Soviet Union and Russia. But getting back to what happened in August of 2016, I think President Obama failed to lead, and I think he will be seen in time by history as having failed at all of these points along the way to have had a decisive answer to the new information. And I think that's because he doesn't come out of he doesn't have a particular vision of American strategy for influence and defense. That doesn't mean he doesn't want to defend America. It's just that Ronald Reagan had an idea of where we stood and where the Soviet Union stood, and if something came in, he would process that information to the benefit of the United States.
But
I think Obama was looking at everything like it's a University of Chicago Law School seminar.
We've had four in
Georgia.
Yeah, I want to follow up real quick with respect to what this revelation means for Donald Trump. So Donald Trump's whole entire spiel so far has been, this thing is a witch hunt. There's no such thing as Russian meddling in the election.
No, wrong. That is fundamentally wrong, and I'm not going to let you get away with it.
It's just collusion.
He writes it every other day.
Hold a second. His point is, I, Donald Trump, did not collude with any Russians. He has never said that there was no Russian activity. This is a distortion that the left has been
promoting. The reason why there are so many leaks from the intelligence agencies, because everybody conveniently forgets, Donald Trump spent the greater part of his inauguration honeymoon attacking intelligence agencies for claiming, for concluding that Russia interfered in the election. It wasn't about collusion.
George, I want to come back to you as one of our partisan Democrats, and that is, I remember when the campaign was over, Donna Brazile, who had been, her reputation had been besmirched because of the WikiLeaks.
Destroyed.
But she was on one of the shows. I'll be kind to her. She was on one of the shows. She was complaining that Barack Obama did not do more to root out Russia's involvement. She said that on one of the Sunday shows. So Democrats, including yourself, I would assume, mm-hmm. you have to be somewhat frustrated that when the president is standing there, do I release this information or do I follow what Mitch McConnell says and I'm going to keep my mouth shut and I don't want to say anything because everybody's going to think I'm putting my thumb on the scales. Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
I would have asked that question on this program.
Absolutely.
But still, if you're the leader and you're looking at what the ramifications are, why would you not do that? It seems to me just another example of weakness on the part of the president.
I don't think it's that simple.
I don't think it's that simple because let's say, okay, so it was at the time when Donald Trump was complaining of rigged elections, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Remember,
yes,
this exactly. was the summer of the
Precisely.
Rigged elections.
So he was onto something.
Precisely.
So Donald Trump was onto Precisely. Something.
Oh, he was onto it the wrong way. He wasn't talking about that. He got locked into being right.
Well, so you have the president of the United States
that.
Coming out and saying Russia's meddling in the election, right?
Right.
What would Donald Trump's response be? That's fake news.
What we saw in the first half of 2016 was we saw Russian meddling and other crap that was pouring at Donald Trump. We saw the so-called Trump dossier and all that sort of stuff. Clearly it was coming with some Russian involvement. Nobody knew how much or from what sources, but clearly there's some involvement. From my perspective, it looks, from a partisan point of view, that Mr. Obama and the administration did not become excited, agitated, or concerned about Russian involvement until suddenly there's the dump in WikiLeaks, through WikiLeaks, and what it turns out is that truthful information is coming out into the public that's showing the Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee in a bad light.
His outrage and his response happened after the election.
Well,
there were public media reports months before about when he met with Putin and the cut it out. Now you may say that was
ineffectual.
You can say that.
You say that.
But that's not my point.
My point is that what these guys said is not accurate.
This predated the election by a year and a half. It may not have been as forceful
The sanctions came after the election.
He was ineffectual, and he didn't care, and he did care.
How do you know what's in his soul that he didn't care?
Well, I'll tell you why he didn't care.
Because if he cared, he would have One at a time, Joe.
He didn't care for two reasons that I think, looking back in hindsight, are very clear. One is he thought initially, at least, that the information was hurting Trump, not Clinton. And second, he thought Clinton was going to win. So there was no percentage. There was no point from a partner.
Bill Clinton, the last of three presidents have tried to reset this clock with Russia. That's the other thing. They say that President Obama, you said that, okay, you don't quarrel with the fact that he wants to protect the country, but not the same way that these other presidents did, Reagan. But presidents have tried the same thing for 15, 20 years with Russia since the end of the Clinton
presidency. Here's my question to everybody. If he had this information, and you say for political reasons he didn't want to reveal it, because he thought that people would be putting on the thumbs would be putting on the scale, the conservatives would have gone crazy with that. But the point is, then call out Mitch McConnell.
Call out and say
this is what we believe. Now again, everybody on the right side of this table would have complained. Okay,
no, Feinstein shifted that.
Just
Bruce.
A minute.
That's why
I would have complained as well. But the reality is, sometimes you gotta lay it out there. And I guess my next question is, if he knew that information, and he knew it in August and September of next year, mm-hmm. last year rather, why weren't sanctions imposed then? Why did he wait after the election, at the end of the year, late in December, when the moving van was outside? Why does he throw the sanctions on them?
Because it would have been galling for Donald Trump to stand up and say, as he would have done, see, I've been telling you, somebody's trying to rig the election. They did not want that to happen. They didn't want Trump to be able to say that.
Trump wasn't talking about Russians when he kept talking about rigging the election.
Trump was talking about somebody rigging the election.
Yeah.
And Trump stings like a butterfly and floats like a bee, to use Muhammad Ali's phrase. If the facts were moving in that direction, that's the direction in which Trump's argument would go.
And by the way, this gets into whether or not there's been any collusion, and that hasn't been proved yet.
Yes, has
not been proven yet. Mm-hmm. I'll put yet on there.
He's in bigger trouble.
The issue though is, are there what was going on out there, mm-hmm. And this movement by the Russians to disrupt the election, including disrupting the voting machines or the voting apparatus in the country, and let's talk a little bit more about that, because that was another revelation that the administration had. They were trying to get secretaries of state to try to shore up federal involvement in the elections to secure the vote. That was part of what was going on out there. All this is going on out there, and Donald, in my view, the goal was not just to elect Donald Trump. It was to delegitimize
the entire American political system.
Whoever got elected, because they would have thought they would have had something to blackmail Hillary on, or the people that think that Donald Trump was
dealing was pretty personal.
No, it's not. At that level,
what I'm saying is the goal to delegitimize the president elect of the United States,
whoever that is,
bipartisan, whoever it was.
Right.
So they would have done the same thing for Hillary.
That's why they have the RNC and the DNC.
I'd like to talk about Mitch McConnell. All this, Bruce, you're asking about the president. What about the Senate Majority Leader?
He's not the leader of the free world.
Whose attitude is reflecting the Washington Republican Post is saying, don't politicize the election. Don't politicize the election. Don't throw something into the middle of the election mix that is politicizing the national security.
You're saying that McConnell was saying this?
I want to go back to Bruce's question about why the sanctions at the end of the term. Why the sanctions in sort of December 20th or so? And I'm only Obama can tell us the answer to that question, it's a fair question. We're never going to know until he decides if he wants to answer that.
It'll be in the library.
I will point out. It's interesting what is getting put into the library that is not reachable for 5 years, and the library is
not down there.
It's out in
Suitland, Maryland.
Finish the point.
Because it's not a library. It's a center. It's not even in Suitland, Maryland. They've now got it in under lock and key in Hoffman Estates at a industrial park. Right. So what I'm
you're losing the audience.
What I want to tell you about is this. It is going to be shown in history that the decision to make those sanctions came well after Hillary started the Russian explanation the day after the election. It is going to be revealed in history that the decision on those sanctions took place in December, and I believe it's going to be shown in history, therefore, unchallenged, that was a political decision that was related to the distribution of sensitive information beyond all prior distribution lists.
I thought the president
inside
asked for a comprehensive.
I'm sorry.
And got it back and then put
what,
saying
what he made. What he has done in December is going to require plumbing by historians for years, because they pushed out information and he made a public show.
All right, we have just pulled the scab off a big sore tonight, and we'll talk more about it when we come back.
Well, Jason, I've got to tell you, you're pretty much everything this company is looking for in an entry-level candidate.
Great.
Your resume isn't quite what we're used to, but you've got a fantastic work ethic.
Thank you.
And I'm impressed by how you carry yourself.
So, should we talk about the job?
What, the job? Oh, sorry. Yeah, I have no way of recruiting or even meeting you. This interview didn't happen.
It may sound ridiculous, and that's because it kind of is. There's a huge pool of talent your company is missing out on. Meet the grads of life. Who are they? Talent worth knowing about. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Man, we really could have used him.
Don't miss out on a resource many innovative companies have already discovered. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Bruce Dumont back. As I mentioned a couple of times, tonight is the 37th anniversary of this program.
Yay.
And thank you for your applause. But I was thinking that in thinking about who the guests are this evening, first of all, George Logothetis, you have been a guest on this program for much of the last, I would say, probably 5 to 7 years. And you've not been on for a while because you're a new mother. Tell us about your baby. You got a little girl.
Just had a little girl a few weeks ago. Her name is Aphrodite. She is an absolute blessing, and we are thrilled to have her. And We are going...
The goddess of love.
The goddess of love, named after her grandmother, Aphrodite. Yes, so a strong name for a strong-willed girl.
Now,
she's already showing her personality.
Will you raise her as a Democrat, or are you going to let her make her own decision?
Well, Daddy's a libertarian, so...
Yes, I know.
She's going to grow up in an independent household and make up her own mind, but I can guarantee you she'll be extremely well-informed on policy on both sides of the issue.
Very good. Also, Michael Golden, you've been a guest on this program for the last several years. You've written a book, Unlock Congress, and you and I had a unique experience this past week. You have a podcast that you do, and you came in and you interviewed me.
I did.
And I was pleasantly surprised by it. It was very enjoyable.
I was honored. This was great fun. I've wanted to do it for years. You're always asking the questions and refocusing us on the issues, and I got to come to the Museum of Broadcast Communications, a tour of the whole place. And I hadn't really looked closely at everything before. I thought it was fascinating. And then you and I talked about your five-decade career in broadcasting. All of these folks that you talked about decades ago before. You talked to Mike Madigan when he was an early speaker. You've interviewed David Duke. I encourage people. I know I sound like I'm pandering here, but go to the Museum of Broadcast Communications website alone to see the archives of all of these interviews that Bruce did one-on-one, even aside from Beyond the Beltway. And it was a great pleasure talking to you.
And if people want to go to your podcast, where do they
find it? They can find the golden, it's called the golden mean, which means the practical middle between extremes and deficiencies.
You're quoting another Greek, Aristotle.
That's right, Aristotle. So they can go to either iTunes, the golden mean, or michaelgolden.me, either one.
Okay, or they can go to Beyond the Beltway. It'll be there as well.
Right.
Joe Morris, you've been a guest on this program for much of the last 15 years. It's been a while since you've been on the show, but you were on for many, many years, going back to a long time ago.
The Inside Politics Day.
The Inside Politics Day.
After the flag thing.
Certainly that.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And also, Chris Romney, come on in so people can hear you, because you've been so silent whenever you're on this program. just like a wallflower. I was calculating, you have been on this show for over 30 years.
And I haven't aged today.
And you probably have been on this program well over 100 times.
Knock on wood. I hope so.
And you were a young Republican operative at the time.
I came on. I was substituting.
You didn't have much more hair, though.
I had more hair. I think the photos show that. I was substituting for the estimable Donald L. Totten, one of the great conservative leaders of Illinois and the Midwest, and a founding member of the Reagan Revolution, a Reagan 76 delegate to Kansas City. He was unable to come on. I came on, and then you asked me back.
And I've asked you back many times.
There you go.
You've been a great guest. And again, also another early member of that group of Republicans and Democrats that would gather every single week was Marilyn D. Clancy. She was sort of the House liberal. And yesterday I had the pleasure of celebrating with her 80th birthday. So,
very nice.
Again, unfortunately, many other members, original members of that panel, Tom Roser and Phil Crone and Chris Bowman, they have left us. But again, we've had great conversations for 37 years. And I would say that the philosophy of the show from day one to where it is today was I did not believe then, and I don't believe now, that all the political knowledge in the world rests on the banks of the Potomac River, that there's articulate people who have passion, intellect, and to bring them together once a week to talk politics for a couple of hours. It's been my joy to do it for 37 years. Hopefully I can do it for many, many more years. But again, the people that are around this table and also those obviously out in radio and television land, we've been on television since 1996. So the show's been around in a variety of ways. But again, it's a delight. As everyone who I speak to, and I think I said it to you, Michael, in the interview, the most fun 2 hours of the entire week are when I am here on Sunday night spending them with you and my friends in the world of politics.
Here, here.
All sides. Let's get back to our discussion. You were going to make a point about the president, and I had made a comment that I thought that the Russians probably have a far more sophisticated cyber offensive as well as maybe a defensive system than does the United States, and you wanted to take exception to that.
Yeah, I think that we don't know what the capabilities of the intelligence community are. I think we do know that America has, you know, the strongest military in the world, right, the highest capabilities. Now, Russia obviously has been at the forefront of its hacking, right? Not only the government, but, you know, quasi-government entities in Russia and everything like that. But, you know, we talk about Obama not making a public statement. We don't know what went on behind the scenes.
Right.
It wasn't enough, clearly, because the hacking didn't stop or anything like that, right? But to suggest, or there's people saying that, well, you know, we just sat on our hands and we weren't doing anything. I guarantee you our intelligence community was certainly doing something. And I think that what we need now is a frank discussion, nonpartisan discussion. How do we shore up our defenses? Because as Comey said in his testimony before on Capitol Hill, they're going to come at us again. This was not a one-time thing.
George is absolutely right. I think that's absolutely right. And our problems began with the good news that the Soviet Union fell and communism began to collapse in the East. The wall came down, and we fantasized, people in both parties. This was a wonderful thing that we'd arrived at the end of history, mm-hmm. whether that meant that history as conflict had come to an end or it meant we'd achieved some goal of the historical process, and that the kinds of conflict that, characterized by a bipolar world of the Soviet Union versus the United States as the head of the free world had come to an end. We didn't need to worry about it anymore.
There wasn't going to be a big bomb.
Exactly. And the future of the world consists of liberal democracies behaving like liberal democracies. They don't go to war with each other. We don't need to worry anymore about that kind of conflict, the existential conflicts for the United States and the peoples of the West. And it was a lovely fantasy into which both Democrats and Republicans, into which George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton bought. And it came with financial benefits. We didn't need to be spending money anymore on the military or intelligence or public diplomacy.
Peace dividend.
At one time, I was the general counsel and the chief of staff of the United States Information Agency, Voice of America Radio, WorldNet Television, trying to have these kinds of conversations with the world at large, Fulbright scholarships, all kinds of ways of engaging the world over the heads of diplomats and smart technologies, not, you know, influencing people without using force. In the 1990s, we abolished it. There is no USIA today. There is no public diplomacy program of that kind today. The Voice of America is today a whisper because in those days we thought we didn't need it. We pulled the plug, and we were wrong. It turns out that there are serious threats to the United States and to the culture and civilization and the values of the West that come from such places as the Muslim world, the fanatics in the Muslim world who are relentless. They talk about playing the long game. Mr. Goldman was talking about Mitch McConnell's long game. These are people playing a game for centuries, with visions for centuries that have returned to the forefront of history. And similarly, the Russians, the Chinese have powerful national interests that are very much in opposition to ours, our political interests and our ideological interests, and they are proving to be relentless in pursuing them, including using technology we never thought they would use against us.
I want to ask a question to our guests to follow up on a suggestion that was made last week by one of our guests when we talked about the first part of this discussion, which was the information that had been leaked by Reality Winner. And we talked a lot about that last week, which was an attempt to really to discombobulate, I'll use that word, election machinery around the United States by going with the registrars and trying to really get into the systems of screwing up the vote.
May I for 10 seconds to say,
very quick.
Look how discombobulated the Russians and others have succeeded in making the American system when people like Reality Winner are celebrated, when people think that being a leaker of national security information is a good thing, that that's some kind of creditable, laudable whistleblowing.
The suggestion last week was we need to go back, don't laugh at me, we need to go back to paper ballots, not centralized government, not more federal government involved, more oversight, more awareness, maybe more training by the umpteen thousands of election officials we have all over the United States, but to go back to human beings sitting down counting a paper ballot.
Well, as a former election administrator, I had the privilege of serving as
City of Chicago,
on the Board of Election Commissioners. You know, there is a lot to be said for that. And there is a lot to be said for how we participate in the actual decision-making that we refer to as elections and voting. And there is a lot to be said for simplicity that gets outside of the cyber world, so that there are not cyber connections that can be exploited by malignant actors.
But that's chimerical because maybe the Iranians, the Russians, and the Chinese can't hack our election systems or some other low-tech systems, but we no longer live in a world where we can depend upon getting by with low-tech systems. We must have high-tech systems all over the place for all kinds of things.
And protections.
As long as we do that, we have to protect them.
Two quick points. I mean, we're talking about, you know, influencing the actual vote totals. What Russia tried to do was influence the election via information, right? I mean, you had entire content farms essentially run by the Russian government pumping out fake news about the candidates, about the parties. So information war is one thing, and that's how you can influence people's votes. With respect to actual vote totals, we don't have a federal voting system, right? We have a patchwork of 50 different states.
Right.
And after the 2004 election, I don't know if you guys remember, but there was this big debate about having voter-verified paper trails on the election systems. And the Republicans stood against those bills to try and get a voter-verified paper trail for electronic ballots.
You got the last vote or the last comment on that conversation. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Why are we going to the store? Mom, I want juice.
Your child will have different needs at different stages of life, and that includes the car seat. See, car crashes are a leading killer of children ages 1 to 13. Protect your child's future at every stage of life. Go to safercar.gov/the right seat.
A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to Mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back, and one issue that I want to just throw out there, because I'm always interested in the timing of how all these things happen. And again, the story in the Washington Post on Friday, if you have not read the story, you really should read it. Normally, I'm not recommending people read the Washington Post, but let's be honest, I mean, in all candor, and I realize that a lot of Republicans hate the Washington Post, but a lot of the stories
still
that
useful.
Came, a Why? Lot of the stories, this story is a story that doesn't make Barack Obama look good, in my opinion. We've just discussed it. You should read that story. And also we should remember that much of the early WikiLeaks and the questions about her server came from the Washington Post.
Great American
newspaper. So they have done things that all sides probably like or dislike. But the timing of this is the WikiLeaks release – the closeness, the timing of when President Obama learned about this information. The other big thing that happened basically within 24 hours of the WikiLeaks, which started the questioning of Hillary Clinton and embarrassing the Democratic National Committee, was
groping.
The excess Hollywood tapes
groping.
About Donald Trump.
Groping.
The tape came first.
Where is right? But where did that come from?
NBC.
Who do we know that as a fact?
It was a production company working for NBC that had the tape, and it was. I think it's pretty well established that there were production people who understood this tape someday. Who knows what we can do with it? And it held it. It basically lived in the production company and the NBC files.
And it cost an NBC employee his job.
Right.
But the way in which the media covered that story,
sure, that was a
versus the story
that was
about
a sexy
the
story,
WikiLeaks,
whereas this one was an important story.
Right, it was like 100-to-1 in coverage. Right,
right,
right.
Well,
I'm going to make a point, Michael.
I,
about you're against the the paper ballots.
I'm not against it. I was just saying we're talking about protecting our systems, but Ted Koppel wrote a book maybe 2 years ago now called Lights Out. It's much bigger than voting systems. Our government, you can call it a sleep at the switch or you can call it at a snail's pace, but
electromagnetic pulse.
Our electric grid, our country is so vulnerable, and it's not something that gets talked about a lot until the grid goes down.
This
and
is
there's,
a,
you know,
this
that's
is true.
What Rahm Emanuel used, he used to say, never let a crisis go to waste. It's the same principle that unless there's something urgent, our government doesn't focus, certainly people don't push the government
what
to focus
should
on
be, what should be the retaliation of the United States against Russia for what they did? Does everybody believe that the sanctions that have been announced are not quite sufficient enough?
Well, those sanctions don't affect people who have the ability to make big decisions,
the power,
and who have the assets to be crippled. Yes. You need to target the people who have assets to be crippled and people who have the ability to make major decisions.
They were trying to change the relationship of the government to the American people. We should change the relationship of the Putin regime to the Russian people. And that means that you have to be very focused and you've got to be very determined. But look, Putin is not a source of stability, peace, opportunity, growth. Putin is a source of Russian nationalism for the benefit of his cliques.
Revanchism. He wants to put it all back together.
I hesitate to say. There is no question. Putin is allocating resources to enrich his supporters and the rest of Russia, the rest of Europe.
It's an oligarch. Yes, oligarchs.
Right. And there is a similar situation in China. And if we're not going to stand up to these people, they'll go as far as they can.
I want to get to more specifics. What specific things can we do to retaliate? And this is even a bigger question. How do we get this divided nation to agree that this was an egregious attempt on our country?
It has to
and
come
take
from the top,
it seriously.
And it isn't. Unfortunately, that's when you question. Have the President of the United States still claiming that the intelligence community is out to get him and that this entire Russia thing, and he wasn't just talking about collusion because he still has not denounced Russia's interference in the election. He hasn't. You know, if he was really a leader on this, he would say, you know, I didn't collude with them, but clearly they interfered with our elections. Here's what I'm going to do as a leader, X, Y, and Z. And American people don't go, you know, praising Putin. But when you see that a key segment of his base trusts Putin more than our American intelligence agencies, that's because they're getting the signal from the top.
I also want to suggest that there is a role for the Democrats to play, and that would be that, you know, the collusion charge, there's no evidence of the collusion charge. Give it up.
Give it up.
No,
well,
no, no,
have
wait,
it investigated
no, 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 right.
And have a
focus,
conclusion.
Focus on the bigger, broader issue, which maybe there is bipartisan support.
Why not both? Why they're not mutually exclusive?
Because I don't think you're going to get to a bipartisan.
You don't think that, but with Flynn, Manafort, there are plenty of characters that have lied and tried to conceal this stuff. Shouldn't you find out how far it goes?
And
that's what they said about Watergate.
Let it go. Those guys don't. The Manafort and so forth. Obviously, they're connected with Trump, but they don't define Trump. I mean, they're not the people who've been putting together the Trump administration.
Fired Manafort.
What we need to do is
focus on the policy differences between Russia and the United States that make a difference. We should not be soft on their attacks on Ukraine.
Well, I agree
we should not
that.
Be soft on their eating up parts of Georgia.
They're not mutually exclusive
We should not be soft on the threats that they're posing to their former satellite countries in Eastern Europe. But the last administrations of both parties have been soft because they both bought and drunk the Kool-Aid of the Clinton, the Obama-Clinton reset that it's possible.
And now we have a president who refuses to say a critical word about Putin. And now President Trump is also doing that. But the fact is, we currently have a president who refuses to say a negative thing about Putin and the atrocities that he's committing.
Are you still looking for innuendo and all rumors and all that sort of stuff? Because all hell's going to break loose tomorrow when Justice Kennedy announces he's going to retire.
Okay. No. Justice Kennedy's going to retire.
And the CBO score is coming out, too. But
Kennedy
tomorrow?
Retiring is going to be bigger
is that
than
happening
the
tomorrow? For, that's
tomorrow
right.
is the You're last not. The last day of the term for the Supreme
okay.
Court.
Okay, Justice Kennedy's going to retire tomorrow. You heard it first.
This last decision's coming
down
tomorrow.
Back to Sacramento.
Be on the Beltway. Our thanks to our guests. Our thanks to Sam Greenberg and Dylan Klauke and Dan Dorfman for their assistance in the production of this program. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night until next Sunday night from Chicago.
Happy anniversary.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Hey, everybody, this is Josh Groban. After so many years on the stage, one of my favorite things about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. Every year, billions of pounds of excess food go to waste, while one in five children may be left not knowing where their next meal is coming from, or if it's even coming at all. Thankfully, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food and helps deliver it to kids in need across the country. But they can't do it alone. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.